You can find us on the web at sproutsradio.org. This week's producer, Pop Defect Radio, from Free Radio Santa Cruz in Santa Cruz, California. I'm Skidmark Bob. See you next week on Sprouts.
Next on Free Radio 101.1 FM, it's Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. It's September 15th today. Stay with me, and I'll stay with you. was Dean Cholos from Grito Serpentino, one of my standbys here. Hope you're sitting by. This is Free Radio, and we're going out on freakradio.org on the net as well as 101.1 locally. If you want to call into this show, and we're concerned here with civil rights, civil wrongs, uncivil activity by authorities, and just a lot of local stuff as well as some heat against the Iraqi war. That's always one of my I try to slip that one in since it's happening, folks. So not enough heat, but the more heat, the better. My name is Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Bathrobes, Piers is Robespierre taking a bath, perhaps, or Robespierre in a bathrobe, or has to do with homeless protests. Used to wear a bathrobe with those things. Sometimes I still do. We're trying to get laws changed locally so that people are not criminalized for simply doing what they need to do to survive. One of those things, of course, is to sleep. Santa Cruz has a sleeping ordinance. I should say a no sleeping ordinance. And that's Municipal Code 6.36010A, supported by our mayor, Mike Rotkin, and his faithful city council, which he used to call the Gang of Seven. If you want to call them up and tell them to make some changes in this or any other ordinance, that's a very simple 24-hour number, not that they'll pay any attention to you, but it's always good to put a little heat on the responsible parties. The phone number to call is 420-5020. Again, 420-5020, easy number to call. You can do it now. Tell the city council time to end the sleeping ban and the anti-homeless laws. I actually made a speech last night at city council. It wasn't last night. It was night before last, Tuesday. They have a meeting every other Tuesday, usually second and fourth Tuesdays of the month, except in August, and talked about the crackdown downtown. Actually, it's more of a sort of an institutional creeping crackdown. They are, as some of you may know out there, removing more seating area on the mall, particularly the seating area where people are clustering that they don't like clustering. We saw it happen in front of New Leaf Market in 2002 when they removed that large planter and kind of turned it into a privatized zone, which was available for the two businesses, including New Leaf Market. The two businesses who used to run it were pretty rigid, and I don't like the idea of public space being seized by private businesses anyway, particularly when it's being done to remove a youth meeting spot. And that's what it was. It was young people, street people on the street, which their manner, their dress was rude and crass to some. And, there were some problems that developed, but there are places there where people meet. And the idea is you deal with the problems. You don't remove the public spaces, but apparently that's not the idea of the Santa Cruz City Council and Cecil Cirillo's Redevelopment Agency or our Downtown Association. So that's what they did. Then they removed the benches from in front of the Pacific Cookie Company across the street, which was where people migrated to. Then when people migrated to Borders, they removed the trash can, the bench there, and put in an change-making machine. That's one of those machines you see standing up there. You think, oh, what's wrong with that? Well, as some of you may know, you're not allowed to sit anywhere on the sidewalk within 50 feet of a change-making machine in either direction, nor can you solicit for funds even silently with a sign. So, and people actually who have been tabling for political causes have been harassed, even though it's legal to table and it's legal to play a guitar with an open guitar case. So it's legal to perform in those areas. Sometimes police don't know the difference or don't care, and they proceed to harass you anyway. But this process has continued at Pacific Trading Company, the area down the street, up the street from the coffee roasting company, down the street from Borders, right between there. That entire seating area was removed in 2003 with a police department grant at the behest of the Heinrichs, who run the Pacific Trading Company. I've been boycotting their store ever since. We actually were cited, some of us arrested in front of there when we set up a table encouraging people to boycott. And the Rotkin move-along law was enforced against activist Steve Argue. Kind of giving you this little historical background so that you can understand that we're seeing this again. Now there's an attack on the kids, grunge punks, goths, street folks, whatever you want to call them, across from the metro, not content with a change-making machine being put in right outside the metro on the sidewalk, probably less than 150 feet from the change-making machine inside the metro. So it was clearly, it seemed pretty clearly to me, an attempt to get rid of people who were hanging out there, because if you make it unpleasant for people to sit down, give the police a pretext to harass them, well, they move on. Of course, they move somewhere else. Now they're putting a change machine in across the street at the, right in front of the Union Grove parking lot. And they've removed the bench, and the machine's going in. And I don't like it. What do you think? You want to call in and give me your opinion? The phone line here is available, 427-3772, 831-427-3772, here at Free Radio. And I will hear what you have to say, and so will everybody else, at least anybody listening to the radio or listening to us on the Internet. I really don't know how many people that is. We'll have to get an Arbitron study. I've always heard about these Arbitron studies, but I don't think... don't know if illegal stations have access to them or what. Have to consult with appropriate people. Anyway, that's one subject that's caught my eye. There actually was rumored to be a protest brewing at the city council last Tuesday around this. I got an email from this guy called Monkey Brains. Not sure. Monkey Man, Monkey Face, Monkey Monkey. He... and it was a he, was concerned with, and I talked to him on the street later, this seizure of public space. And I think we actually have an interview with him, maybe playing that later in the show. I'm going to play a little bit of what I said at City Council on Tuesday, if I can get the darn thing queued up. But for balance, this is just for all you conservative folks out there who I know are glued to the dial listening to my show and who feel perhaps that I'm unbalanced in one way or another. I do try to present perspectives that I don't think get out, even in Santa Cruz, voices from poor people. I mean, I'm pushing a particular point of view, which has to do with broadest possible participation in government which protects the rights of poor people, issues around rent control and police accountability, transparent city council process, sweeping clean the old Barisone-Wilson regime at City Hall. Barisone is our city attorney. Wilson is our city manager for life. But here, for example, today I'm going to play for you some commentary from some folks, residents who live around the park, who are upset with what they call drunks and dope addicts in the park. And I'm going to have my commentary afterward, but I'll give these folks their say. And they did. They came to city council. These are elderly folks, most of them older than I am, and I'm getting on. So what do you think? Maybe you can, you out there listening, if you want to call in and you're moved to, feel free to do that, 427-3772. Let's hear what some of the public had to say to the Santa Cruz City Council and the Santa Cruz community on the 13th, 2 days ago, when they appeared at city council.
You. I hope that you will let us know by pre-registering if you're able to attend any portion of the workshop.
Actually, this is a prior speaker. Sorry, the tape is needs a little bit of better cueing, but the appropriate stuff is going to come on. Now, this is the oral communications period, 7 o'clock at City Council.
There are great things that are happening, including an effort to get high school students to the workshops. I think you'll find
shortly
Marshall
going to be past
to
this
be
little bit of tape,
educational,
and you'll hear again a series
really
about four
too.
People,
he's
five people perhaps,
wonderful.
Speaking
okay.
Passionately
thanks
about Santa Rosa Park.
Next person would like to come up, please.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members.
Good evening.
I think that's what we need more of, is nonviolent communication in San Lorenzo Park. I sent council members copies of our petition last month. I'm talking about the residents in San Lorenzo Park Apartments, which face the park, Dakota Avenue, and we have an ongoing problem that's getting worse and worse, and it We're just trying to follow the law, which says in various places that alcohol is prohibited in San Lorenzo Park. And you're not to camp there, although there are people who live there day and night. And they're loud, screaming, profanities under the influence of alcohol and drugs, maybe. And we're really fed up with it all. And we're hoping you can help us. Since I think we're the only residential area building that faces the park. So we're the only people who hear all this and see it. And I see everything, actually, from my window. And it's gotten to a point where we don't know how to deal with it anymore. And it's getting worse. And I know the police have been trying, but there doesn't seem to be any solution so far. So I just wanted to remind you to read our petition again and take it into consideration. Thank you.
Thanks for bringing that back to our attention. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Joyce Keller. It's nice to be here tonight. And I want to thank the mayor and Ryan Coonerty for responding to our letters and petitions. I just want to kind of add to what Joan said. The situation in our park has just been horrible all summer. I heard one of my neighbors said the other day, she was standing on the second floor of our building. She looked down. She saw somebody go into the park and make a drug deal and come out and sit in their car and shoot up. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's been going on in the park all summer. It's people sit around smoking crack, drinking alcohol out of brown bag paper bags, shouting obscenities, screaming at each other and fighting. And it's a very dangerous place. I was glad to hear there was a drug bust recently. Maybe they got some of the bigger dealers, but I can't see that the problem is solved. I spoke to Steve, the head of the park department, the other day, and he said he was hoping there might be money to get some kind of security guards in there or more police in there. And I think that's really what we need. And we thought of going to the media with this problem, but we decided we would wait and see what the city was willing to do. But if we have to, we will go to the media. So I'm fortunate enough to live on the other side of the building, so I don't get woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning very often. But I don't have a car. I have to walk across the footbridge, across the river, and it's scary at times. You may have a letter I had a letter put in all your boxes today, which describes some of the hair-raising experiences I've had coming home carrying heavy groceries, trying to get across that bridge with drunk and crazy people on it. So it's a disgusting situation. And I know the city does, you people all are proud of this wonderful city. I was walking along the river, and a tourist came along the other day with her dog, and she looked, I was on the other side of the bank, and she looked across and she said, I'm tired, you know, I don't know if I need to rest somewhere, but is that what I think it is in that park, a bunch of, you know, drug addicts sitting around, and, you know, in a group? And I said, yes, don't go over there. I mean, this is not a good situation for this. I love this city. It's not good. And my poor neighbors, you don't know what they're going through. Some of them are elderly and sick, and it's just horrible. So anyway, I just want to say that, and we have other people to speak on our behalf, and I want to thank you for the efforts you have made.
Thank you.
I'm Grace Rao. I live in the San Lorenzo Park Apartments across the park. And I go... This place has been a very good place for mothers to bring in their babies, for little children to come and feed their ducks and play around. And school children come there for that exercise program and run around. And now for a while, the grass falling has been stopped. They are there otherwise. And the university students live at the end of the park. They come and go quite often. And pretty soon, the time will change. 4 o'clock will be dark. It'll be difficult to go through, even for the students to go across to buy food or anything across the bridge. It is quite unsafe. The cops come, but doesn't do much good. I don't know why. And please consider all these things and do the needful for us and for the community. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Shelley Marquis. I'm a new resident to Santa Cruz. I've been here a year and live in the apartments across from the park. I've definitely seen it get worse this past year. And just this week, I couldn't cross the bridge to go to Trader Joe's because somebody was like swerving back and forth, and I saw a construction worker heading my way, and I asked him if he'd help me, and he did. But I would have had to turn around and not even get to my destination. And my grandchildren come, and they love to play in that park. But now I don't think I even want them to come and play in that park because it's filthy, and it's filled with all these people. And when I cross the bridge, not that we're just complaining about the noises we hear, there is a lifestyle going on there that is terrible. It is terrible. I look to my left as I cross the bridge, and there's a family there with a little child. I mean, I think social welfare should be in there for that family. And it's and then to the right, there's this whole community of drug addicts and alcoholics, and it's pretty spooky. And if you're not supposed to be living in the park, then I think it's up to the officials of this town to make sure they either go to shelters or child welfare looks into this particular child's case and make it right. Thank you.
Thanks. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Manny Marquis. I'm Shelley's husband. And the reason I want to talk to you is because the problem is, even though we're new to the city of Santa Cruz, the problem is really getting bad. It's a beautiful park. I am constantly awoken in the middle of the night with people yelling, screaming, foul language. And it's, I guess it's a combination of alcohol and drugs. And I think the city should do something about this. I think perhaps more homeless shelters should be built, and people probably should be forced into more drug rehabilitation than currently undergoing. That's all I want to say.
And thank you.
Thank you for hearing me.
Thanks. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Thomas Levitt. I'm a resident of Santa Cruz. I live on SoCal Avenue now.
And Thomas, you're listening to the City Council oral commentary from two nights ago. Thomas Levitt's an activist who's concerned about something else. Actually, I came to support him and speak at City Council, too, and you'll hear me in a moment as well. But we kind of were caught with our pants down, so to speak, in terms of these comments from the folks, the residents around the park, and I'm going to comment on them. But here's what Thomas Levitt had to say on a somewhat different subject.
I just provided you with a copy of the comments I'm going to make tonight, or some of them. There's one for each city council member, for her, Leslie's records, and for the city attorney, should he wish a copy. And these are published on Santa Cruz Indy Media under the title Having your say at city council meetings is a right and not a privilege. And the subtitle is How Does Santa Cruz City Council Fails to Respect the Spirit and Intent of the Brown Act and the First Amendment. And I'm going to read a few items from this. And if you're interested, the general public, you can see it on Santa Cruz Indian Media. Or as a city council member, you can read the whole article. So as citizens, you know, we have rights that are guaranteed by the First Amendment to the Constitution. And they're further enhanced and procedurally detailed by California's Ralph and Brown Act. And I'll read you the introductory section from that act, which is some beautiful words. In enacting this chapter, the legislature finds and declares that the public commissions, boards and councils, and other public agencies in the state exist to aid in the conduct of the people's business. It's the intent of the law that their actions be taken openly and that their deliberations be conducted openly. And the people of the state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. The people in delegating authority do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. And the people insist on remaining informed so that they may retain control over the instruments they have themselves created. Some of the rights we have are the right to provide testimony at any regular or special meeting on any subject which will be considered by the legislative body before or during its consideration of the item, as well as the right during at every regular meeting to provide testimony on any matter under the legislative body's jurisdiction, which is oral communications, what we're doing right now. According to Attorney General Bill Lockyer, and this is important to understand, public meetings of governmental bodies have been found to be limited public fora. As such, members of the public have broad constitutional rights to comment on any subject relating to the business of the government body, and any attempt to restrict the content of such speech must be narrowly tailored to affect a compelling state interest. In the article, I list several issues I have with the way that the city council has decided to constrain public input and participation in the meeting. And the one I'm most concerned with is the five-minute limit for public comment on consent agenda items, which I believe is unnecessarily constrictive, and no other city council has in place.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And that's all about actually the thing I was arrested for way back on June 14th for wanting to talk on a consent agenda item just for a minute or two and not being allowed to because I'd spoken on other items in a violation of a new rule created by the city council. I think Thomas was going to speak about that, but he didn't quite get around to it. Well, we did have 3 minutes. It's kind of hard to slip it all into that particular period of time. The issue, which some people may find kind of irrelevant because the city council doesn't much listen to the public anyway, generally speaking, at least most of the public, is, you know, should the public have the right to speak at city council in a meaningful way with sufficient time to really address the issues? And obviously the city council would prefer to simply, the less they hear from the public, the better, except through the channels they prefer. And they've been cutting back time repeatedly. And that's one of the things that I'm suing the city council for at the same time as I'm defending myself in their prosecution of me for standing at the microphone and asking to speak for 2 minutes on a union issue, actually an anti-union action by the city council way back on June 14th. Now, if you're interested in reading about this, you can, as Thomas Levitt said, go to Santa Cruz Indy Media. That's www.santacruz, small letters, one word, santacruz.indymedia, I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A, indymedia.org, which is a good source for local information. Although, as I always have to say, they have some bizarre censorship reactions. Why my producer, Becky Johnson, is banned from any kind of posting on Indy Media because of her views on one subject, which actually I don't agree with her on. She's a supporter of what I consider to be Israeli expansionism and Israeli government policy in the West Bank. But because they don't agree with her here, they've cut her off from posting on any subject, and they don't give reasons as to what their particular reason for eliminating a post are. So there's some concern about censorship on that site. I have some concern about it. I also have some respect for the people who work the site and who have to, you know, do the work in putting it all together. And I continue to urge them to drop this blanket censorship policy, at least with respect to her, and perhaps with respect to other people too, if they can. I recognize we're trying to focus on certain issues, but I think we need to allow as broad participation as we can. And that is not being provided now. And to me, it's somewhat outrageous as to what's going down there. But getting back to the issue that we heard earlier at the City Council, the concerns of residents around San Lorenzo Park about grubby people, homeless people. Actually, they didn't talk about the word homeless. That word homeless did not enter in, though they did say people were living and sleeping in the park. First of all, it is illegal to be in a city park after dusk. I don't think it should be, but it is, thanks to regulations enacted by former Parks and Rec czar Lebensraum Jim Lang, as I called him. Jim Lang is his actual name. Nice enough fellow, but a person who had this, what I call, kind of a liberal fascist agenda. I mean, he had an agenda which essentially, it's not fascist for middle-class people, but it has that edge for those who are poor and homeless, or even working class and on the edge of being homeless. Parks are all closed at night. You can't be there. In theory, it's even illegal to walk through the park at night, I suppose. I mean, it's not entirely clear. Just as Kennedy and Rotkin and Matthews made it illegal to walk along the riverside at night. It's illegal to do that, too. All this is supposedly a safety measure and to get rid of those evil, you know, druggish people. It's essentially to clear out the area at night to make middle-class people feel more secure. And it's not that people who are elderly, or even people who aren't elderly, who are living nearby, don't have a legitimate right to peace and quiet in their homes in the evening, and indeed during the day, you know. But the question is, are there tools for dealing with this now, and where does this new hubbub come from? And it is a hubbub. We're talking, what, five or six people talking one after another in a row. There are petitions apparently going to the City Council, or a petition, some letters. I haven't seen them, hoping to take a look at them. If any one of these individuals wanted to call the police department and say, I wish to file a complaint that there is a person in the park at night, I want that person cited and removed from the park, he or she could have done it. Period. And the police, I'm pretty sure, would have responded. Now, maybe you're saying, well, they're afraid of putting their name on a complaint. You know, it might the alcoholics in the park might track them down and go get them. You know, highly unlikely, but okay, let's suppose we got some meth freaks who are particularly vindictive and want to bother to do that rather than defend themselves and move on. An individual doesn't even have to sign a complaint themselves. They can, provided the person is still in the park when the officer arrives, the officer will make the arrest or the citation or demand the person leave. I don't think it's I think it's kind of nasty to go after a person that way. But if, you know, the person is creating a disturbance and you're trying to sleep and they won't shut up, well, that's a reasonable thing to do. You know, that's your only your alternative. There is no indication in any of these speeches of that anyone tried that, other than saying that they talked to, cooperated with the police. Which leads me to my next question. People like Officer Jim Howes, who in 1999 tried to lead he went door to door trying to get people to put up no parking at night signs on Almar Avenue, at the same time as the Homeless Issues Task Force was working to expand the right of homeless people to sleep in parks somewhere legally, provided they don't make a huge racket at night, provided they don't engage in, you know, illegal behavior. The police department organizes this kind of what I call sort of vigilante community response that is gentrified and really goes after the poorest people. And yes, the people living outside are poorer than the people living inside. I'm not saying we want to pit them against each other, but the police like to do this kind of organizing, and particularly Howes. We invited Howes to come to a Huff meeting to discuss his peculiar perspective, and he said we were not a legitimate group. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for those of you who are new to this station. And just as a quickie, you are tuned to 101.1 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And you can call in if you have any thoughts, if you disagree with me, if you agree with me, if I'm being too mild on this issue, give me a call, 831-427-3772. Or perhaps you feel that, you know, the concerns of these residents merit further action by the City Council. Maybe we can bulldoze every fourth street person or all the street people there. Just get rid of them. They're bums. Kick them out of town. You see these letters in the Sentinel frequently or regularly. Illegal actions are already punishable. And one wonders why there isn't one example There's no specifics. No police stats were brought forward. And, of course, they weren't proposing anything particular, at least in terms of a specific proposal. But, you know, I can see something coming down the pike, some new law cooked up by Coonerty or Matthews, you know, and endorsed by Rotkin and Porter, and, of course, supported by Fitzmaurice and Riley and Madrigal, you know, our great union minority guy who has taken some stands on some union issues, but, of course, is afraid to say a word about the sleeping ban. And they mentioned that they've talked to the Parks and Rec director, Steve Hammack. Or not, he's not the director. He's kind of the sub-director. Hammack is the guy who can't find where all the benches were taken from the downtown. He's asked to find the records as to where and when benches were removed, just like the bench was recently removed from across the metro from where at Union Grove Music. Who did it? After what kind of a hearing? What kind of public process happened? He can find no records of any of this stuff. I put Public Records Act requests in 2 years ago. When I went in with Yon Golder, also known as John Golder, to investigate this, they arrested Golder on an outdated restraining order, took him to jail. We had to kind of coax them into not going after his dog and his trailer, actually. I mean, they weren't going to take his dog and his home. He lives in his vehicle, but there's a sort of a nasty, sharp edge to the kind of how do I put it? I wouldn't call it a wave of gentrification. It's like a kind of an advancing phalanx of gentrification. There's this sort of nasty quality that we're going to not only drive you away from here, make it less hospitable for you here, but if you want to investigate what we're doing and have any public input into the process, not only will we not allow it, we'll make sure that the records don't exist anymore. We'll keep no record of it. When you ask, for example, for emails of city council members on this issue, you'll find for a number of them that they don't go through the city council email system, so all their emails suddenly become private. Even though they are city council members, even though they're being addressed as city council member Matthews or whatever, you're not able to find out what was said because they've manipulated the process. Rotkin claims he doesn't have to reveal as mayor his upcoming agenda in terms of where he's going to be, where he will be having public meetings with people, even though that's required by state law. Even though every other official in the state does this under the city law, at least, and there was one official who didn't, a CEO of a public hospital system in San Diego, and he was sued, and now he has to do it too, so San Diego or Los Angeles, or so I hear from the First Amendment coalition up in San Francisco that follows this stuff. And in Sacramento. Again, getting back to the issue of the park, it's true. There's a bunch of pretty grubby, sometimes drunk, and occasionally drug-using people over there who, you know, are pretty poor and pretty ragged. And there's some fights that happen over there. I don't know if they happen with any greater frequency than elsewhere, but you got to remember that these are people who have been driven off of Pacific Avenue, for one thing. And they're not allowed at night. This only happens during the day. So there's really an entirely misleading cast to what these folks are saying. I mean, I should have talked to them, and perhaps I will, because they were gracious enough and courageous enough to give their names for the record. And so presumably they can be approached, and I'm going to try to invite one of them to speak on the radio if they'd like, although I'll explain to them that they're talking to an audience, people who might be more sympathetic, at least some of the audience, with the folks who have no place to go. And that's another issue. These people should be in shelters. Why aren't they in the shelter? Because, obviously, they don't know it. There is no shelter. Until the armory opens, and even then there'll be shelter for less than 10-12% of the folks, there's no shelter for eight months of the year, for other than 39 people out of a population of 1,500 to 2,000. And so there's no indication that these folks have any understanding that some of the reason they do this is for self-protection. The folks who are complaining live in homes or apartment buildings where they're indoors. They have a door they can close and lock. They have friends or people they know next door. But if people who are outside want to do the same thing, then suddenly they're a menace. It's the perception here, of course, too. Because I notice there's not one case of any of these individuals who has been assaulted or even addressed offensively by any of these individuals in the park. They just don't like their lifestyle. There are plenty of fundamentalist Christians who don't like a lot of lifestyles, perhaps even of the people who live in the apartments. You know, it's just, of course, the folks in the apartments aren't so visible. The main complaint seems to be noise. And that's legitimate. And the thing to do is to, what you need is to somebody who's policing the area. I mean, there shouldn't be any noise theoretically because there shouldn't be anybody in the park at night. Maybe they're talking about other times of the day. I guess what I should do is go stake myself out, maybe even stand illegally in San Lorenzo Park and try to investigate this stuff at some point. And once I finish fighting court cases and find a place to move to, which I may have found a temporary place to move, by the way. Thank you to those who are trying to help out with that. Then maybe I can do that. I would encourage anybody who does do this, who goes to San Lorenzo Park at night, let me know, are people there in the park at night regularly? If you talk to them, are the police patrolling the park? What's the perception of the people actually in the park? I'll try to find out some answers to those questions, too. Quite unsafe was a phrase used by one woman. No doubt she felt unsafe, no question about that. I don't know if it was unsafe. Again, there's instances of people fighting each other within their group, just like there's a lot of domestic violence instances. But do you then say it's unsafe for others to be there, such that you have a right to crack down on people who have very few alternatives already? I don't see that unless you could bring out the real stats. Of course, real stats and real crime has never been a concern of city council politicians preening themselves for the next election that's coming up within a year, as they did, for example, when the Riley-Porter downtown ordinances were passed that criminalized sitting down on 95% of our downtown sidewalks and actually anywhere in any business district in town, which criminalizes 75% of the sidewalks for performing, for political tabling, which makes it some absurd regulations that may well be changed soon because John Maurer's lawsuit is going to federal court. He's the guy who had the little sign that said, after he was repeatedly harassed by police for peaceful panhandling, he had a little sign, "Fuck the pigs," in parentheses, "police," on his hat. And police then went after him for the sign. And he was able to not only get the prosecution dropped, but the attorney, Paul Sanford, who was doing the prosecution, warned the people who were doing the, warned the city attorney's office, who was putting a lot of energy into this kind of stuff, change this law, or we're going to pull it out from under you. And that's what they're trying to do, and that's what may happen with the panhandling law, which is good. It's outrageous to say you can't sit down with a sign on Pacific Avenue if you're not in somebody's way and if you're not aggressively harassing them. And that's the reason that signs were not originally a part of the panhandling law. They were added because Riley and Porter wanted to make a big... Instead of paying attention to the real concerns of police harassment and selective enforcement that came out of their June-July 2002 hearings, instead went after their prefabricated agenda, which was get rid of the bums, the punks, the youth, give the police more powers to do what they want to do, what they're already doing anyway, is clearing people away without an excuse. Give Pam Bechtel a bigger ticket book, a sharper pencil, and more tickets. Pam Bechtel is a CSO who's particularly abusive downtown, particularly militant. You've heard me critique her on the radio before. I got another story in court yesterday when I was there. The Huff meetings are held in the basement of the county building right next to the court. 8:30 in the morning, for those of you who are interested in coming to Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, although we may change the place, but it'll be on Indie Media if we do. And there was a guy there who was in court for medical marijuana. It wasn't even his medical marijuana. He was in a car with somebody else's medical marijuana, and Pam Bechtel decided to stake out the car. And she then... She wrote in a police report that he had dropped something suspicious, and he explained he was looking for something in his wallet. the whole prosecution is absurd anyway, because once you have a medical marijuana card, which he apparently could acquire if he wanted to as well, because he has some conditions that might merit that, the whole business of police spending any time on this, and then the prosecution, Bob Lee's district attorney's office going after this, is just, it's all some kind of, not just a bad dream, but an extremely well-organized bad dream that seems to be systematic and repeated time and time again. We have a drug war going on in Santa Cruz that the ACLU isn't interested in, you know, that Valerie Corral and WHAM is not interested in, that liberals and progressives on the city council couldn't care less about, probably support. Instead of addressing the real issues, as we try to do when we talk about, we don't wait for Bush to change his mind on the war. You know, we speak out on the war. Similarly with the war on drugs. This is outrageous. The war on drugs, which is really a war on people, as has often been said, is a futile, pointless boondoggle for essentially organized crime and the police department and pharmaceutical companies and some you know, drug rehabilitation services, which have gotten bigger under Proposition 36. It's a boon for the prison industry, and we all know this. But locally, we don't do shit about it. It does no good, you know, to protest something happening thousands of miles away if you won't deal with the same issue in your backyard. Which brings me to another issue, which has to do with that a recent communique I got from Tom Noddy. Actually, it was a forwarded to me by street performer Coral Brun, who is one of the SAFE performers, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression. That's the group of street performers every Wednesday, they were there yesterday, that come down and reclaim the public space in front of New Leaf Market, play and feed people food, compliments of India Joe Schultz, formerly India Joe's, now he's, I guess he's a broader caterer throughout the county. 2 years ago, Noddy put together a benefit for street performers. This is in the wake of the repressive downtown ordinances, kind of round two. He had won, to his credit, an emergency action by council member Mike Rotkin. He was a council member at that time and not a mayor, to have an emergency law to exempt juggling from the anti-performance ordinances downtown. It's illegal to bounce a ball. It's illegal to throw a frisbee. It's illegal to hacky sack. And it was illegal to juggle. And Noddy got the big-time runaround, and so what he did was, he, after getting finally sick of this, he did some juggling himself downtown until he got arrested, and then he invited other folks to come to town and do some juggling too, and immediately Rotkin, seeing this was had a public relations disaster tag attached to it, changed the law in an emergency session, I should say as an emergency measure. We can't get the sleeping ban on the agenda as an emergency measure, but we can get juggling okayed in downtown Santa Cruz. It's incredible. So Tom Noddy then held a thing called Only in Santa Cruz, which invited a number of us performers to. He was a champion of, to his credit, the Street Performers Guidelines, which is a voluntary set of guidelines that for 22 years worked fairly well by his account, and I haven't heard other accounts that contradicted this, even in the very discussions of the legislation that threw out the street performers guidelines that the city council put in later. And it was essentially a voluntary understanding between performers that they'd, you know, if somebody complained, you give them an hour, either a merchant or another performer wants a space that you're using, and you don't have to move along, but, you know, it's just sort of considered courtesy. Instead, we got the Porter Riley hall monitor rules, as Becky Johnson termed them in one of her articles for Street Spirit, where you have to move along after an hour on penalty of $150, $200 fine, and the second time you do it, misdemeanor, you're in jail, $1,000 or 6 months to a year in jail, $1,000 fine. Is that 6 months or a year? And some of us were pressing to have some demonstrations around this. We were glad that there was a juggling change, but. And Tom has a lot of street cred, and I was hopeful he would do something there. But instead, what we did was we had a big benefit indoors, which is very nice, which actually rounded up a lot of money for some of which came from the Keep Santa Cruz Weird T-shirt put out by Neil Coonerty, owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz, father of Ryan Coonerty, city council member. And that T-shirt idea, I think, also netted, and bumper sticker idea, I think netted Neil some bucks, too, big time. I think the street performers got a relatively small percentage of that, but, you know, it was generous on his part to give anything. And this money was then supposed to go, there was a meeting of street performers, a decision as to where it would go, hopefully into some kind of a union that would protect the rights of street performers. And I really think a local focus is important. And what this email talks about is this email is a call for relief for New Orleans artists and musicians relief and benefit events and activities to raise funds for New Orleans artists and musicians who've been devastated by Hurricane Katrina. And it's a call for the funding to be used there. You know, I definitely am concerned, obviously, about anybody in trouble, particularly people in cities who are street performers, who probably have less resources than other people. But it's also true that I would think that Hurricane Katrina victims, there's a particular focus on helping them now from a variety of agencies. I'm not saying that they are being helped enough. There was obviously a horrible response to this whole thing by Brown and by Bush and by Chertoff, supposedly the guy who really could have moved in and done something, according to Amy Goodman's show today in Democracy Now, and didn't for 36 hours, nothing, you know. Brown's now kind of blowing the whistle on Chertoff. But I'm just, you know, I'm wondering, you know, this money has not been spent on local performers. I mean, I really think, I urge people to look locally to these kind of issues. And I'm wondering how people feel about it. Here's what Tom writes. And, you know, Tom is a man who's worked on this issue for decades. He blows bubbles professionally over in Germany, does great shows. He's fought for the rights of a lot of people at a lot of different times. I first ran into him in the early 70s. I actually roomed with him for a while in the mid-90s. He was my landlord. His heart is definitely in the right place. There's no question about it. We have strong disagreements on tactics. There's no question about that. Here's his letter. I'm writing this letter to street performers and others who are probably not street performers but once got themselves onto an email that went out to Santa Cruz Street Performers. A few years ago, we organized performers for the purpose of putting on a show. At that time, we added money to our longtime credit union account. Some of the money came to us from the sales of T-shirts and so forth. When we last met, we agreed to keep the bulk of the money for the possibility of some future legal expenses to produce a show or launch a union. And he's written a letter that several people involved in the organization in Santa Cruz proposed that we send money to the account send the money abroad. And I guess I'm not against foreign aid, you know, not against domestic aid, not against disaster aid. I just like to see some local action taken. And Thomas said to me, well, you know, propose some action. You know, and there are groups that are working downtown regularly, and there are people who are getting tickets. And I guess maybe that's what needs to be done. But I mean, I would encourage street performers who have problems to email Tom Noddy, who does have access to this fund. It's tnoddy@aol.com. And, you know, he's pretty generous about it. He's pretty clear about it in terms of legal considerations. I mean, that's something he isn't in town a lot, but when he is, I think he pays some attention to that. Now, he hasn't authorized me to say any of this. He may be ticked at me for making these comments, but I don't think I'm being unfair or inaccurate in what I'm saying, so I'm doing this. And street performers need help here. Street performers need some kind of, well, I think we need a return to the street performers' guidelines. I mean, you have performers like Moo, the flautist who's been driven away from Pacific Avenue, in essence, after being repeatedly ticketed by Pam Bechtel. You have safe performers who are harassed by police for simply performing near a newspaper rack, which is legal. You don't have the kind of watchdog situation I'd like to see. But we do have, you know, expanding street performer consciousness, and there are positive signs here. So I just thought I'd mention that before moving on to the next thing. If you have any thoughts, comments, or questions on this, feel free to call into the show, 427-3772. And you can also reach me off air, in case you want to do that, at 423-HUFF. Also, I'm at pagesincolor.com, which is a chat room here in case you like to chat on the computer. Enough of me. Let's have some of this. Anne Feeney, Do Re Mi. I'm putting a call through to Richard Quigley to see if we can get Richard. Hey, Richard, hang on a second. So, Richard, can you hear me? Richard, are you there? Can you hear me? Hang on a second here. We'll try that again. We're going to get a hold of this guy one way or the other. Well, I do. Let's have a little music to cover this fumbling.
dad, he was always on the bum. Every September he'd grab him a southbound and he'd ride. Then along about Christmas, me and my brother get a few coins.
So I'm hopeful we actually have Richard on the line. Richard, can you hear me? Are you there? Hello? Boy, I am just... This battery phone is just the pits, right? I just don't understand how to work it. Okay, I'm going to try back on the other line here. Let's see what we got. Try again. I think we're going to get through this time. I think we can should be ringing any time now. Ring for me, baby. Come on. Come on. Now. Hello? I'll try one more time. This is what we call... doing it in the studio in the middle of the show, and I apologize again for this. We actually have a ring here. There we go. Success. All right. We're going to be talking to Richard Quigley, who is familiar to some of you who've heard this show regularly or irregularly. Richard is a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Hey, Richard.
Hey, Robert.
Hey, I can hear you. I've got you, unfortunately, on the call-in line, so we can't get people to call in to you to ask questions. But
oh, phooey.
At least we can get you to talk out, and maybe people can get to your website, which we're going to begin by letting people know what it is and what it is your website is concerned with. Tell me again what your website is, and let us know what you're up to, at least what your main struggles are these days, aside from staying alive.
Talking about my personal website?
I'm thinking more about the issues, really. You're fighting a case with the California Highway Patrol. You've been active in advocating for Jerry Henry, the disabled street minister who's been out at Aptos and has been repeatedly finding himself banned because merchants don't want to do it. You know, don't like his advocacy for actually young people out there, but people, and he looks raggedy. And you've also had a lawsuit against Sheriff Mark Tracy. Those are three issues that particularly concern me.
Okay, all that stuff you can find if you go up to Google. You've heard of Google, right?
I have.
Yeah, just type Richard Quigley and in there. That should take you to my personal webpage. If that won't do it, write Richard Quigley and then Freedom. I guarantee you it will.
And Quigley is Q-U-I-G-L-E-Y, right?
Yes, sir.
So you had, I think, former Sheriff Mark Tracy by the short hairs, to put it genteelly, because he sent in one of his deputies to put pressure on the radio station KSCO, where you were broadcasting about, a year and a half ago, a regular noon to one Thursday program?
Yeah. Yeah, he sent Kim Allen in there to tell him to either get me off the air or they were going to have trouble getting news out of the sheriff's office. And since they're a news-oriented radio station, that was a pretty substantial threat. It was an absolute affront to the First Amendment. I mean, as vile as you can get, that behavior is the very behavior that the First Amendment was put in there to prevent. So he couldn't have been more definitive in his disregard.
Well, was he concerned perhaps because you were spreading panic, reading pornographic stories on the air, urging child molesting? What exactly was he concerned about that you were saying on your radio show?
Oh, well, what did he say or what was it actually bothering him? What actually bothered him was is that as a member of the board of directors of the Aptos Chamber of Commerce, it was very important to him to protect the merchant members of that organization, and of course the woman that runs the whole thing. What's her name? Karen Hibble. The unelected queen of Aptos. Unelected. She's just there wielding all kinds of political power.
So what kinds of critiques were you making that threatened Hybl and also ex-Sheriff Tracy, who's, I guess, still a member of the Board of Chamber of Commerce, right?
Well, I don't think he's any longer. I think now Robbins is. I think that it expired with a... That's one of the things. You know, I didn't say she was unintelligent. She's just a fascist bitch. But now Hybl has taken the supervisor for our district, the district attorney, the sheriff, the deputy in charge of the local substation, anybody with any political power at all, and included them in the board of directors of the Chamber of Commerce. And that way, they've literally been bought out from under the voters. Their obligation is to function, I guess, as a member of the board of directors of the chamber to their interest. And their interest, as expressed by Ms. Hybl, in their mission statement, has to do with, you know, promoting business and all that kind of stuff. And then the last of it says, and to help the community develop a sense of personality and pride, which is sort of interesting. It's like we didn't have any before she got here, but she's going to fix it now kind of thing.
Well, what kind of criticisms or comments were you making that so upset Ms. Hybl?
Well, I think I talked about the kind of activities that she had the sheriff's deputies involved with, like banishing Mr. Henry and beating up my girlfriend, you know, doing whatever it took to shape that community to Ms. Hybl's desire.
Well, now, Mr. Henry is a personal friend of yours. You talked about you mentioned your girlfriend. Is this some sort of personal vendetta, or is there a broader sense in which you feel the police are acting, or the city chamber of commerce is acting inappropriately at the, let's say, the Rancho Del Mar shopping center, which is, I guess, where a lot of these issues first came up the coffee roasting company?
Yeah, not just the shopping center. They literally are running this community. I mean, for example, you don't see any cigarette stores opening up in Aptos. Because Karen Hybl don't like cigarettes. But, of course, she's got the morals of a goddamn whore, so they've got perfect girl. You know, your girlfriend can go down and learn to do pole dancing and stripping and buy all kinds of sleazy negligees and shit. That kind of crap's right out in front of everybody, you know, for everybody to see.
So you think she has a particular influence in the decisions as to what kinds of stores can open?
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know why. I can't imagine. Well, I know why. It's because she has by getting all these public officials to support her act, convinced the merchants in this area that they either support her or they're gone.
That
she wields all this political power. And
have you talked to any dissident merchants who agree with you, or maybe surreptitiously, kind of behind the scenes?
Oh yeah, absolutely. How do you think I found out about it?
But
they won't say anything, because if they say anything, the members of the chamber and everybody, it'll ruin their business. No, it's unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable. This is the kind of shit you only read about. You don't actually get to live it.
Well, I know that in the past we've talked to you about Jerry Henry's experiences and the experiences of his caregivers at the Rancho Del Mar's Aptos Coffee Roasting Company, and then at the Pacific Coffee Roasting Company, the little
his existence
up the road.
Yeah, his existence of Hybl and friends of Hybl. That's where that goes. And because his existence of Hybl and friends of Hybl, he's got to go.
So, again, describe for us who Jerry Henry is and what he, you know.
Jerry Henry's just a street minister. He's part of this community. And he used to be down there at the shopping center every once in a while, and when he was down there, he suddenly found himself under attack.
How so? I mean, by what, nuclear weapons?
No, some asshole from First Alarm walked up to him and poked him in the chest and told him to move along. And he hadn't done a damn thing. He was just finished buying some groceries at Safeway, was standing there rolling a cigarette, getting ready to go home.
So the result of this has been essentially almost 10 years of prosecutions from from district attorney, I guess it was Art Danner. And
hundreds of thousands of dollars in court time and police work and all that kind of shit. Yeah, to banish him so Ms. Hybl would feel comfortable about her sense of what this community ought to be.
And then he hired some San Francisco attorneys, because his family is fairly well off, although apparently they were threatening to raise the bail increasingly. He's the only person I know of who, I guess, in the 90s got a $100,000 bail for what, conspiracy? Was it to buy a cup of coffee or to look at a dress or something?
No, conspiracy. He conspired with somebody to go into the coffee shop and buy a cup of coffee for him.
And I know recently it was a $50,000 bail outside the Aptos.
No, that was down at Pacific Roasting Company. He went in there to buy a cup of coffee.
And these criminal behaviors really can't be tolerated, particularly by ragamuffins like himself.
Exactly. They don't meet Ms. Hibble's standards.
And so the result of all this was, I mean, he was going to go to trial to fight it, but he, I think, made the unwise decision to plead after getting some serious pressure from a retired Superior Court judge.
He put his faith in Bill Kelsey, and Bill Kelsey hung him out to dry. So he ended up entering a plea of some sort to one count of disturbing the peace or something. And instead of facing 2.5 years in the state penitentiary, he only got 2 years probation, the conditions of which is he has to have this banishment for another 2 years. And he's still never done anything wrong.
What about his caregivers? Are they also banished? Or?
No.
Because I know that they've also been at different times arrested.
Oh, they've been arrested. Right. Hell, I've been arrested in defense of him. We've all been arrested for trying to protect him from these assholes.
And this is, we're talking about Colleen Crosby's coffee roasting company, right? She's the liberal woman who is up for free trade coffee in Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah. If you believe in that free trade coffee shit.
But apparently not free access to the roasting company in Aptos, huh?
No, apparently not. I've never met the woman. I don't know that much about her. I know that what I know about business indicates to me she's a terrible businesswoman. But other than that, I don't know much about her personally.
Huh. Well,
no, I don't see how you can stay in business, you know, throwing your customers in fucking jail. I just don't get that one.
So, what does Jerry do? Is he's allowed to come to the center, but not allowed to go in the coffee shop, or what's his current status?
So far, the district attorney was supposed to get a hold of the coffee roasting company, because if the coffee roasting company doesn't want him banished, then he won't be. But he is for the time being, because the DA, of course, hasn't got a hold of them to find out whether or not it's okay. It may be that Crosby's already, you know, decided it's okay if he goes in there. But they haven't been approached as they should have been by now by the DA's office. So there's no answer to that. And Jerry's already said, as far as he's concerned, as soon as they, you know, if they don't banish him from there, game, you know, it's over. Everybody gets to go on with their lives.
Is this a policy simply about him, or is it about other people who are, you know, poor looking and?
No, just him and everybody that's willing to protect him. All the rest of the ones that look like him have been run off.
So if they came back, they too would face this kind of...
Oh, they treatment? Do. Anybody that shows up in Aptos that doesn't meet the criteria that Hibble has laid down for acceptable people in our community have to leave.
Do you have any, you know, specific examples of this?
Well, besides Jerry Henry?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a half a dozen disabled people that have been run off by him.
Do you know the names of any of these people?
No. They're just people that I've known or met down there.
Huh. And what have they told you?
Well, they haven't told me. I've just watched them get run off.
What have you seen?
I've seen the cops go up there and tell them to leave. First alarm go up, tell them to leave. Shopping center, tell them to leave, you know.
You actually heard the conversation where they didn't accuse them of any particular crime, but just told them to leave?
No, you got to move along now.
Loitering, eh?
Oh, whatever.
What about you and your motorcycle? Do they ever come up to you and say, hey, you ain't got no helmet, buddy. I'm afraid we're going to have to take you and your bike into custody.
Oh, that's only happened one time. Full blown one time. And he got slapped down pretty hard. That was Watsonville PD. They're a little slow on the learning curve, but they'll figure it out.
Now, you've actually been unique and among California, I don't know, it was plaintiffs or defendants. I guess you were a defendant in this case. where you were accused of not having a proper helmet on. We've talked about this in previous shows, and actually you recently did a show with me and Becky Johnson co-hosting you on Community TV, Club Cruise, which airs every Tuesday and Thursday, 7 o'clock in the evening, for those of you with cable TV. And it should be coming up in a week or two, or maybe a month or two. I'm not quite sure when it's coming up, but keep tuned for that. But and you went through a rather extensive discussion of that situation, but the situation has been that you essentially have there's a problem in the liability and the law federally, and the state reaction to it, which essentially means that California Highway Patrol officers cannot legally require you to they can't define the kind of helmet you can wear.
Right.
Does that kind of cover it?
Yeah. That's good enough for the layman's understanding of it. It's a little bit more complicated than that in court, but yeah.
And the reason for all this is a combination of I should be able to wear my own fucking helmet however I want.
Well, actually, I should be able to decide whether or not I want to wear anything wherever I want. That's where I'm at.
Right, and also that
at 61, don't you think it's about time that people allow me to dress myself?
Well, you're only just beginning the great adventure of life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you have been fighting this fight since the early 90s. You've had some remarkable successes. I mean, along the way, for example, you have persuaded or required you and Kate Wells, the County of Santa Cruz deputies, to include on their form a little box that says that we advised the defendant that he or she had the right to go before a magistrate, which is different than we kind of went through this before, but which is different than having a right to go before a judge after you've been booked into jail, but be taken immediately to a magistrate under a if you're charged with a vehicular code section, correct?
Right.
Why is this important?
Well, because once the court has jurisdiction over, once you accept the court's jurisdiction on traffic matters, then you're considered in commerce for all intents and purposes, and you're limited. Your freedoms, especially to due process, become extremely limited. And so it's all a jurisdictional thing.
It sounds kind of technical, but let me ask this. When would an ordinary person presented with a ticket want to say to the person, I'm not going to say to the officer, I don't want to sign this ticket, take me to a magistrate instead, meaning let's go to court. Obviously, the courts would have to be open, because even though theoretically you're supposed to be a magistrate's clerk at the jail, there isn't, and that they'll just hold you in jail. But when would you advise an ordinary citizen to use this provision?
Well, I wouldn't, because I don't usually give legal advice. But with that said, with some research and a little study, you know, not something we could do on a show, you know, of this nature in this time frame, but just learn where your rights are, man. Fight for your status. Make sure that you never waive your status.
Well, what I'm just saying, though, is, I mean, why would anybody want to go before a magistrate rather than simply sign the ticket and then deal with it later as a court matter?
Well, because once you sign the ticket, you have waived all your jurisdictional challenges.
I see. Okay, so this has to do with, isn't it also true that if the officer is really acting up, if he's giving you a completely bogus ticket, you have a chance to go immediately before a judge and claim there's no probable cause here?
Yeah, well, of course. That's the whole purpose in it. See, under the vehicle code, you're arrested when they pull you over to write you the ticket. So what you do is you challenge that arrest, and you can't be arrested for an infraction. At least you didn't used to be able to. I still think in California you're not supposed to be able to, but I don't know.
I think that may
have started or tried to change that lately.
Now, you for years have also been fighting for essentially the right to choose your own headgear or non-headgear, as the case may be. Have you been alone in that fight, or a lot of people in California fighting for that as well?
I think I'm the only one in 500,000 motorcyclists. I think I'm the only one that's riding free.
So, are you a, you know, a relic of a bygone era? Are you a, I mean,
as far as bikers go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Shit, yeah, dude. We used to represent freedom on the roadways 50 years ago. But now, as far as I can tell, most of the guys that ride motorcycles are just like everybody else, waiting to get in line somewhere, two abreast, no talking.
Huh. So I had thought that there were other people in other jurisdictions who were challenging this helmet law and who were kind of in agreement with you.
No, as far as I know, I'm the only one in the western states that's doing it. I mean, we got a suit going in Nevada that's supposed to clear out theirs. I just got a hold of a judge up in Oregon, and I'm working on taking theirs down, and of course California. And if all that happens, we'll get Washington along the way. So I'm really on a, you know, it's pretty, well, pretty grand attack. But I think ultimately I could be successful. It depends on whether or not I can outlive my adversary.
And you are currently in a somewhat medically difficult situation, and hopefully you'll learn more about that fairly soon, right?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I know you're not looking too good. Hopefully, you'll get some good better information or whatever. What interests me in your case is because I'm not a motorcycle rider, at least not much, and I'm, you know, the intricacies of jurisdictional law have been something I've never really mastered that you've talked about. But what I've noted is your willingness to stand up for your own rights.
Yeah.
And in so doing, to provide a model for others who want to do the same. I do this as well.
Yeah, should they want to follow it, I have definitely laid down the model.
And you have had a particular success recently. We've talked about this on the air, where the whole force of the California Highway Patrol, which is a fearsome thing to see behind you at night. At least I don't feel terribly comfortable when I see a feel more secure when I see a CHP person behind me. Usually I feel less secure, not because I'm doing anything illegal, but just because I've been pulled over before for trivial things. Perhaps it's because of my colorful...
You're starting to fade. I can hardly hear you either out, or I'm starting to fade.
No, I think you're doing good. I'll be a little more, a little louder here. Maybe.
Okay.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not that I'm that... interested in the biking issue, the motorbiking issue per se, but in your contacts with the California Highway Patrol, they have attempted to require you to, they pulled you over. On one occasion, they confiscated your motorcycle.
No, not the Highway Patrol. They
I'm sorry. Watsonville Police, was it?
Watsonville stole my motorcycle.
Let me put it this way. Various police jurisdictions, including the California Highway Patrol, have at different times, and I know it's important to make these distinctions because you don't want to accuse one jurisdiction of the crimes of another.
Well, then it's important to point out that Watsonville was acting under the advice of some sergeant named Lobb when they pulled their bonehead stunt of arresting me and stealing my motorcycle over there.
Well,
Lobb, CHP sergeant, he's just a jerk. He's gone now. They sent him up to Oakland. But he's the reason I got these last 9 tickets that Judge Barton's dealing with. They all came from one bad cop.
Well, tell us a little bit more about what's been happening with that case.
Well, Judge Barton ended up with all of them in front of him, and he ruled they were all correctable violations, which is consistent with the vehicle code. And once he ruled they were all correctable violations, then I just had to get them signed off, and they went away. And then the cops wouldn't sign them off, which is their fiduciary duty.
And
so then Judge Barton issued an order ordering them to sign them off. And Watsonville signed off the 4 tickets they were dealing with. And CHP refused to follow the judge's order. So we're going back in for a contempt hearing against them on October 7th. And in the meantime, the judge had the attorney general, who got dragged in because the CHP was about ready to be held in contempt. And he had the attorney general draft an order for the CHP telling them that if I invoke my right to be taken to a magistrate, that they were absolutely not to confiscate my motorcycle or take me into custody.
This is the first time I've ever heard of such an order being issued by a local judge that essentially tells the police, hands off, stop engaging in illegal behavior.
Yep. Pretty powerful shit, but It's the same thing. See, it happened at the federal level, too. 10 years ago, the federal court told the CHP to quit doing this ad hoc and arbitrary enforcement and shit, and held them very tightly to the criteria before they wrote a ticket, and CHP has just ignored them. And so far, they've ignored Barton. They don't seem to care much about about court orders. They're, you know, they're CHP. They're going to do whatever the hell they want.
Or about telling the truth in court. This is an issue I would bring up.
Yeah, well, that's another one I'm working on is them four lying cops.
In fact, four California Highway Patrol officers testified that you had no helmet on your head or nothing covering your head.
Yep.
And you had a tape recorder and tape recorded conversation that tended to contradict that.
They talked about the insignias that were on my headgear. Well, at the same time testifying that I wasn't wearing it,
And yet one after another police officer came in, a California Highway Patrol officer, and gave the same false story.
It's called testifying.
It's called what?
Testifying.
Testifying, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this was done on the auspices of, who was the DA who oversaw this?
That was Gretchen Hurley.
Huh.
No, wait a minute. No, I got that wrong. No, Gretchen Hurley's a cop. Hell, I can't think of her name.
But it was under D.A.
Bob
Lee.
Oh, yeah, it was under Bob Lee, absolutely.
And you acquainted Bob Lee with this perjury?
Oh, he'll care.
But did you let him know that his...
Oh, hell yeah.
...that his D.A. was suborning this kind of perjury?
Well, she's got... she's got the advantage of being able to claim that she's too stupid to know the difference. And she didn't know they were lying.
That who didn't know they were lying?
The district attorney.
Attorney.
Yeah, she could always claim she didn't know they were lying.
Right, but I think that when you point out, you show the tape, you show the testimony, the district attorney's responsibility is, if not to prosecute the officers, it should
be. Are you familiar with the concept of denial?
Isn't that a river in Egypt?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's also what people do when they can't face the truth. They go into denial. And I think there's a lot of that going on with that particular D.A. I don't care to remember her name. She's such a nice woman otherwise.
In any case, and I've been going back and forth with you about whether Barton, you know, should have done something immediately. You said it was the DA's responsibility, and Barton was going to take his time and do something down the road, and he has indeed issued you this order protecting you and directing the CHP, whether it likes to or not, to sign off on your helmet.
Yeah, and his finding was that my testimony that I was wearing something the day those four cops testified that I wasn't was accurate, and theirs was false. He made that ruling in court.
Right, but
he started wheels in motion for them four cops to go away.
But they are probably showing up giving similar fanciful stories in other courts
for the time being.
For the last year since that happened. We're talking with Richard Quigley, who rides a motorcycle often without a helmet.
Always.
Always without a helmet.
Yeah, I'm down now to where I ride bareheaded, dude. I don't give a shit anymore.
Wow.
I figure if the California Highway Patrol could tell a Superior Court judge to go fuck himself, I don't have to follow no goddamn statute. So, you know, straight up, I just ride bareheaded.
Let's get back to the case of ex-Sheriff Mark Tracy.
Yeah.
Tracy's sending Deputy Kim Allen to the station to direct the station to either get rid of you or not expect any appropriate news releases. Was that the nub of it?
Yep.
The station didn't immediately shut you down, right?
No, they didn't. They not only didn't shut me down, did not succumb to his threats, but I didn't even know about it for 5 weeks.
Didn't even inform you that this had happened.
No.
However,
I found out from Kim Allen, because I have to call him and ask him if he'd done such a thing, because I'd been putting pieces together for a while, and he said he had, and I called my attorney, Kate Wells, and within an hour, she had a copy of the lawsuit in my computer for my approval, and she filed it the next morning. We sued that sumbitch forthwith. And the station took me off the air because I was doing a major elected public official. And they claimed they had a policy that said you can't be on the air and do that, so they put me on a leave of absence.
However, once the lawsuit was over, your leave of absence, strangely enough, continued.
Well, I don't have a regular Thursday show, if that tells you anything.
Well, do you feel that Michael Zwirling, the head of KSCO, in essence, either broke his word to you or succumbed to what I would have to call pressure from the sheriff's office, even though Tracy is no longer sheriff?
No, you know what I think? I think in spite of all his talk about all the political stuff that they do and all the things that they accomplish and all that kind of shit, when the time comes that their 10,000 watts of power actually accomplished something, it scared him and his mom so bad they were just afraid to put me back on the air. I don't think they understood, you know, it's like, you know, people that go to a packing house stop eating meat, at least for a while. And I don't think they realize what it takes to get rid of a corrupt public official. It takes a hell of a lot more than information. It takes courage. And they're real short in that department.
But you did, through this lawsuit, some say, put the county in a position when they offered you a settlement and you said no thanks.
Well, no, I made it clear to them early on that there would be no settlement that would allow me, no amount of money they could give me, nothing they could do that would allow me to walk away and leave him in his shirt. I told county council that early on. And although the discussions of settlement agreements and all that stuff are pretty firm, I hadn't changed my mind at all by the time we started talking settlement agreement. And sometime between the time that the judge over in San Jose figured out that was my attitude and the second settlement conference, Tracy took an early retirement.
So we have you to blame for having to pay Tracy an extra $150,000 a year for his
You don't have me to blame, buddy. You don't have me to blame. You got your own elected officials to blame. Don't put that on me.
What's happening with the new sheriff? You know, your health hasn't been the best. So you may not have been out there that much. But what do you think of the new sheriff, Robbins? You were initially rather favorable, and then I think you kind of reached a point where you thought perhaps not so much so.
It's hard for me to get a read on him. I know that I've called twice to talk to him, and I've talked to him both times, and the outcome of the conversations were productive. And I really, I always want to believe in judges. I always want to think the best of these people. So in order for me to reach the point where I will dismiss them as screwed up, they really got to make a point with me that they are. And he's a long way from having done that. So my initial read on the guy is I know that the morale of the department is just incredible to what it was, but Tracy was there. But that may have more to do with Tracy being gone than any qualities of Robbins. I don't know. There's no way to know that.
Why do you think the morale under Tracy was bad? What exactly did he
do? Well, because everybody knew they were working for an idiot.
As for example, exemplified by?
The first thing he did was start taking government grants from the federal government, which means that these deputies were taken away from their duties of going out there and dealing with real crime. And they had to start working out all this agitating shit that these grants required. And so they had, it wasn't police work anymore. It was pushing the envelope to find out if the Constitution could prevent them from doing stuff off these federal grants. It was just a power grab by the federal government through the grant program. And he just bought into that. He took every grant that, there never was a grant he didn't like. He liked them all.
What kind of federal grants are we talking about? We're talking about like Homeland Security, marijuana, that sort of thing?
Well, I don't know the kind of grants you use where you start buying grenade launchers, you know? I mean, they got grants to open up all these service centers in all these communities. And, of course, as soon as the service center opens up and an area like Aptos where you got virtually zero crime, all of a sudden you got to start showing activity. So normal, everyday, lawful behavior suddenly becomes unlawful because you got to show that you're doing something for this grant money. So they're just running around screwing with citizens over chicken shit bullshit, and decent cops don't like to do that. And they're put between a rock and a hard place. They've got a career, you know. They've got the retirement coming. They've got a family to feed. They've got bills to pay. What kind of stand can they take? So they go ahead and do it because they have to do it. But their morale is all fucked up. And then he kept putting idiots in charge, you know. He took the worst cops that he had and made sergeants and lieutenants out of them. And these good cops were being left just as regular beat cops and shit. And it really does. It tears the heart out of a department, and it tears the heart out of a good cop.
Has that changed now, or are they pretty much the same power structure in place except for the top?
that's one of the things I'm having a little trouble reading. I don't think that, that Amy, Sergeant Amy, what's her name?
Christine.
Yeah, I don't think that she's lieutenant quality peace officer. I've seen too much of her to believe that, but she just got promoted to lieutenant. And I think that's pretty screwed up. But on the other hand, I got a high degree of confidence in, oh, come on, you're so good at coming up with names. The guy who used to be in Internal Affairs.
Oh, Skillicorn.
Skillicorn. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they made him lieutenant. That was long overdue. Good cop, you know? And so, I mean, he's a hard one to read. You know, I don't know. We're going to see what's going to happen next year in the election. We'll see who runs against him and why. And there'll be guys talking to me in the department. They always do. They know that I'm a friend to law enforcement. And so they'll feed me because they know that I'll get the word out through folks like you, you know, about what's going on. And if they want to see somebody besides Robbins in there, they'll let me know.
You've not
I'll
been...
Let,
you've
then
not
I'll
been,
let you know. We'll just keep going.
I know that at one point you considered after KSCO continued your enforced leave of absence because they didn't want to give you back your show. You considered a lawsuit against KSCO briefly, did you not?
Well, I thought about whether or not it would be productive. And my conclusion was is it probably wouldn't. So that was as far as that went.
And you also thought of applying for a show at Free Radio, but you didn't. You decided not to do that either. Why not?
I don't like the censorship problems that you guys have. You know, there's too much censorship goes on there. I didn't like the way they treated Becky Johnson over her stand against the Palestinians. And not that I give a, you know, I don't have no dog in that fight anyway. But I just didn't like the way she was treated over it. I didn't like the fact that she couldn't say this and couldn't say that. Radio Free Santa Cruz, my ass. You know, just like the government, you just name it the opposite of what it really is.
I may have to cut you off very quickly here, Richard. You understand you're treading on forbidden territory.
Well, probably.
Actually,
probably, you know, that's the nature of freedom. It's going to create a lot of offensive personalities and conversations and points of view. That's the whole reason the Founding Fathers made sure that it was protected.
You,
there's
I think,
never,
have
never been into it, huh?
I think you got too high an opinion of the Founding Fathers, but that's fine. I mean, I like the principles in spite of their personal slave-owning habits.
Well, I always thought you had too low an opinion of them, so there you go. And we're back to that personality politics thing again. They were incredible guys. Those guys used to talk to one another, and they talked to other people, and they read books. They had more education and an understanding of how the world works in their little finger than the average politician does in their whole being today.
Yeah, but they had a lot of they had massive amounts of property, and they didn't mind lording it over the rest of the country. And
You know, that's the communist perspective. You know, the capitalist perspective says
I don't know
great
the communist
guy.
Perspective. It's you know I don't know if I call myself a communist. I just seems to be true. I mean, that's
well,
they
I
were.
I didn't say that you were a communist. I said that's a communist perspective.
Well,
I think
it's a true perspective. Well, whoever has it, I mean, I think it's you know you might say the world is round is also a communist perspective, and it's also probably hopefully it's also everybody else's perspective if they want to look at the issues
straight on. I just don't see anything wrong with people with people that work living better than people that don't work. I've just never seen anything wrong with that.
What about people inheriting property and slaves and
I don't see anything wrong with inheriting. I don't think because you die, everything you amass during a lifetime, you can't pass on to your children.
Even if you acquired it through questionable means.
Oh, questionable by whose standards and what standards?
Okay.
You know,
well, this is 21st
century standards against 18th century activity is a little bit out of line.
I understand. No, I mean, that's true. It's a sort of anachronistic, so to speak. We're talking with Richard Quigley, who is probably pretty anachronistic himself, but that's another story. Richard, you have a website. I'm going to roll on you pretty quickly. Let me give you a moment or two to sum up what you think if anybody is listening, what they should really be hearing. If they haven't heard anything else in this conversation, what you think they should hear.
Oh, Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution of California says all people are by nature free and independent and have an inalienable right. And what that does is define our status, each of us, our status. That is by the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. And so when somebody comes to you and they want to diminish that status, you remember, as much as you may not like it, it comes from God, which is, you know, by nature, by God. You know, you got these God-given rights that have absolutely nothing to do with the bureaucracy, and they can't take them away. And as long as you insist on those rights, you not only improve the quality of your life, but you protect the quality of the life of your offspring forever. And I think it's reasonably important to do that, since we've had so damn many people fight and die for that. People should feel really put on to have to stand up and stand for it one more time. You know what I mean? My work's been fairly simple. Nobody's ever held a gun to my head. I never worried about whether or not I was going to come back in a pine box. I mean, realistically, never worried about it. And I find it a pretty satisfying life. But as long as you protect your status, when you give that up, you're fucked. And by the way, you're going to have a hard time when you get home and start listening to the news.
What are we going to have a hard time with, Richard?
George W.
Uh-huh. He's resigned.
Public enemy number one.
Well, one of them.
Yeah. Well, his little speech tonight is going to turn a bunch of heads. It's going to be real hard for the liberals to bitch about what he's doing these days. But they're going to do it because they're just, you know, uniformly stupid, but pretty damn good speech. Makes me proud.
We'll have to have you on defending some of George's more unpopular positions at some point. We'll have a little debate. Richard, thank you for, you know, taking time out in what is, you know, I know if you're not feeling well, not the best time to do it. But how, again, can people get onto your website and get more information in terms of, you know, the issues that we've been discussing?
Just go to Google.com and type in my name.
Quigley, Quigley.
Richard Quigley. Type in Richard Quigley, and first thing up there will be my personal homepage.
Now,
where I got three different pictures of me and a whole story of everything I do, and I talk about it not being an ego piece. That's the one.
Now, do you still have all your old radio shows accessible?
Yeah, they're all archived from the portion that has my picture and discussion of me being a talk show host.
So you can actually hear why they tried to dump you. Why they did dump you from KSCO.
Yep.
Thank you, Richard, and get better.
Yep. Good job, Robert, as always. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
Coral, there's an individual engaging in some kind of flame and acrylic art up the street between the two kiosks, about, I don't know, 20 feet away from the music here. He's got a crowd around him. I guess he's doing some art of some kind?
Yes, spray paint art. Beautiful stuff, and I've seen him in the past, and then he disappeared for a few weeks, months, I don't know.
But there's a problem with you, with this artist, right?
It's got those, turn it off a minute. What do you call the inorganic solvent type things? I can't handle it.
Some kind of fumes are bothering you?
Yeah. I can feel it going burning down my throat, in my nose. I recently tried to do a painting job, and I used some primer, and it was the same kind of experience. I was too out of it for a while. I wore a mask. And
I know that he himself is wearing a mask. I'm going to go over and take a look at this guy. So I'm wandering over to the artist who has kind of is leaning his artwork against the railing, which includes, you know, lots of kind of scenic palm trees and starry skies and moon. And looks like an acrylic scene. What do you think of his paintings?
Not sure, Mr. Norton. How are you?
Norris,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Community TV and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Battling with the mayor and all that.
Yeah, well, trying to inject some life into the scene.
Yeah.
I like the concept. The problem is it's disrupting the singers because they're having trouble breathing over there. These fucking fumes are coming out, so I don't know. Right. I know this, he has a mask. The rest of us don't, you know. So.
Yeah, well, we're standing here on our own free will, right?
Right, right. But there's a bunch of performers up the street, or you know, it essentially drives away if they have to keep you know breathing this stuff. But it's nice painting. Yeah. Have you talked to them? Because some of them are kind of having trouble with breathing. What can I tell you? In fact, they're on the verge of making a complaint, so be advised.
Well, they're disturbing us over here. They're making a lot of noise.
Well, yeah, that's where we have dueling complaints.
So, you know, it's one half dozen of the other, right?
Well, I don't know. Noise is one thing, but crap in your lungs, stuff in your lungs is something else, isn't it?
You know? Always have something.
You can always, you know, if you're in this area, you can plug your ears, but you can't stop breathing, can you? You know?
Don't drink down the name of a horse.
What's that?
Beautiful.
They can go away from where it's going.
That's true, but if it's toxic, it's toxic, man. I mean, that's what the deal is, right?
Environmentally friendly.
Beautiful.
Well, if it is, why doesn't he say so? You know? You know, he smiles at us, but he doesn't say anything. I mean, they're definitely nice paintings, no question about it. So anyway, just passing on the word here.
Yes.
Radio, what's your name?
My name is Solar.
Hey, Robert. I'm Robert. And this is a beautiful work you're doing. Where? How long have you done this?
17 years.
And what kind of material are you using? It's acrylic paint or?
Yeah, it's acrylic, oil, and technics mix.
And how long does it take you to do one of these paintings?
Depends.
Tonight, were you doing one tonight? Well, I mean, you've been doing a couple here tonight, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's see, how long did this waterfall take you?
This is oil paint, and this is long time for the dry, you know? Maybe 4 days.
And how many hours of work do you have to put into one painting?
Oh, it depends. For example, the acrylic is flat dry and can work more.
~150 hours?
Oh, no. Maybe...
So we're talking to... Again, your name is...
Yeah. For example...
We're talking to an acrylic artist.
The whole time is for pain. It's necessary watching for hours, for, you know, for deciding where is the element, where is the colors, what you need.
But this actual, do you remember how long it took you to do this waterfall painting? 2 hours, 10 hours, 20 hours?
Maybe 20 hours.
So 20 hours of labor went into that. And are you able to sell them to make a living, or is this something you do because it's just your passion? Or
I have preference to different place, but I put my vision, you know.
And where can people view your work? Have you got an exhibition, or are you just on the street?
In 2 weeks more, it's the opening in the art gallery in Church Street in Central.
Okay. I'm not sure exactly where it is, but there's an art gallery on Church Street.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you know the name of it?
Solart.
Solart. Okay. All right. Well, we've been talking with... What's your name?
Solart.
You are Solart. But what's the name of the art gallery?
It's
the one on Church Street, whatever that is. Yeah, okay. Just so maybe folks can see you there. Thank you, Solar. So there was quite a crowd around Solar earlier. In fact, there's still one woman who's observing from the side. Your name is?
Sherry.
Sherry, what do you think? Are you an artist yourself?
No.
You're a lover of art?
I like it.
Or a liker of art?
Yeah, I'm a liker.
And you like what you see?
Yeah, it's very unusual. Very, very unusual, but it's beautiful. It's pretty. It's colorful.
And it's kind of visionary.
It's out there.
Yeah.
But I'd like to put some more out, you know, so that we only have like one left and then some paintings. I'd like to see more.
Breakfast, please.
Every face needs a mirror, every caller needs fizz. Every king needs a jester who can tell it like it is. So every killer needs a victim, every house needs a telly, every rich man needs 100 empty bellies. And no one needs to fake it anymore. Oh, every son of a needs a bitch, every ass needs a hole, every mother needs a fucker, everything you say is bull. Shit. Every savior needs a sinner, every diner needs a dinner, every bar needs a boozer, every winner needs a loser. And no one needs to take it anymore. Oh, every Scot, every German needs a shepherd, every Siamese needs a twin, every Belgian needs a waffle, every Irishman needs gin. And every Scot needs a skirt, every jerk needs a friend, every train needs a station, every song needs an end. Amen.
That is called
Needs.
And it is on your latest CD?
It is on my next CD.
Oh, wow.
Which can be obtained by going to
me.
You can be found at
breakfastmusic@yahoo.com.
And there you have it.
Downtown, try to sit down and then the host will remind you that
rifles raging. Salute and show your papers, or it's you they'll be engaging. Spaging again. The crowds are much wider there. They walk past all your troubles, step over your cares when you're downtown. With all the shops uptight, downtown. Lit up so rich and bright, downtown. Uniforms waiting for you. Stand up for the wretched and homeless. Cops will drag you down, downtown. They'll make you shut up or face the weekend and lock up, 'cause the merchants own downtown. Yet you may find somebody poor like you do understand you. Someone who is getting screwed and needs a helping hand to challenge the wrong. So maybe we'll face them there. We can't forget all our troubles, but we'll share all our cares when we're downtown. Things will be real when you're downtown. Don't let them steal your rights downtown. Let's sing together tonight. Cops use bad laws to drive the poor away. Downtown, ring out the alarm when the consuls with badges turn the sunlight gray. Downtown, raise the price of tyranny for those who run the city. Spark a new resistance to the petty and the shitty. What's their food? It's better than hiding out. It's time to wake up and boogie. Just stand up and shout at this downtown. It's here for all tonight. Downtown, not just for rich and white. Downtown, dance and recover your dreams. Downtown, remember what counts, that the sidewalks belong to everyone who goes. Downtown, the rich and their cops may have the guns and the law books for a right to grow. Downtown, don't run away from thugs today, whatever badge they're wearing. It's time to care and time to dare to wake this life worth bearing. Take back joy. Yes, maybe we'll face them there. We'll stand up to the bullshit. Let bullies beware when we're downtown. Don't let them steal your rights downtown. Stand up, put up a fight downtown. Let's sing together tonight. Downtown.
Stand. And I don't know who let that singer in the studio. That was Downtown, sung by some safesters and some questionable people. On the line, I have Chris Brazda. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Robert.
What's happening?
I am about to get to my machine. I did a new article under Abuses of Psychiatry on my webpage. Just Google my name, Brozda.
So if you want to read about abuses of psychiatry, go to Brozda?
Right.
Uh-huh.
And you have some tape that you'll play on Sunday about the takedown. They took me down twice. They hurt a ligament in my right knee. It's difficult to walk.
This was recently?
During the takedown in the jail.
Right. We actually did an interview, I guess it was yesterday,
right,
in which I'll be playing that on Sunday. I'm about to take off, but Sunday I will be back at 9:30 in the morning, and people want to listen to that sometime between 9:30 and 1. We're going to be doing that interview. Anything coming up in the next day or two, Chris, people should know about?
No, just I'm writing every day. I need 3,006 signatures. If you want to send me a message to Simabu, CIMABUE at mindspring.com, to subscribe to my letters. It's difficult to find my material unless you go to my sectors, and it's difficult to find my material. I do need 3,006 signatures beginning January 1st and closing February 23rd to qualify for the ballot, either that or $1,500. So if you want to contribute to my campaign, if you believe in my ideas, impeach Bush, get out of Iraq, fund the Department of Peace, uphold the Geneva Convention, campgrounds nationwide for the homeless. on nuclear fusion reactors, establish a direct democracy, nationalize the defense industries, or remove the profit motive driving the war on terror, and expand the Peace Corps from 6 to 60,000 people.
Got to interrupt you, Chris. How can people reach you now?
I'm at 464-0501. I'll be online tonight, so do send a message. Simabuse, C-I-M is in math, A-B-U-E, at mindspring.com.
Okay. Chris, thank you, and maybe we'll talk to you again on Sunday.
Thanks a lot, Robert.
All righty, man.
Bye-bye.
Don't